Hi, my name is Jeff Wurzberg. I'm an attorney with Norton Rose Fulbright, and welcome to Professional Development in a Crisis, sponsored by the Payers, Plans, and Managed Care Practice Group. PPMC, as we like to call it, keeps you up to date on all legal issues concerning health plans, insurers, third-party administrators, pharmacy benefit managers, and other hybrid organizations. And we hope that this will provide you with some interesting insights and thoughts about professional development during this very challenging and unique time that we're all experiencing. So again, my name is Jeff Wurzberg, and I'm a senior counsel with Norton Rose Fulbright in our San Antonio and Washington, D.C. offices, and I'm excited to introduce you to our other panelists today.
Great, Jeff. This is Lori Mahalik-Levin. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thanks so much for inviting me, Jeff. I'm a partner at Dentons in the Washington, D.C. office in the group, in the firm's healthcare practice, where I practice on a 50% schedule. And in the other 50% of my professional work week, I run a program called Mindful Return that helps new parents transition back to work after parental leave. And that during COVID has been helping a lot of working parents just navigate the current crisis. I also have two wonderful redheaded boys who are ages 7 and 9 and currently remote schooling in second and fourth grade.
Everyone, this is Yusuf Zakir. I'm the Director of Diversity and Inclusion at Holland & Knight. I've been in the diversity, equity, and inclusion space for about 5 years now. Prior to that, I spent another 5 years or so as a litigator at Latham & Watkins and clerk in the Central District of California as well, and I'm happy to be here.
Hi, I'm Steve Seckler. I'm President of Seckler Legal Recruiting and Coaching. I'm located in the Boston area, and I've been not practicing law since more than 30 years ago, graduating from law school. I recruit partners, associates, and in-house counsel for law firms and life sciences companies, and I also coach lawyers on their careers and on marketing, and I have my own podcast, Counsel to Counsel.
Terrific. Well, thank you all for joining today, and we're 7 months into this pandemic, and so much of our lives have changed personally and professionally. Lori, you mentioned your children. I have 4.5-year-old twins who are home with us and make every day obviously very enjoyable, but also very challenging. And so this idea of balance has really been challenged. I would love it if all of you could talk about the biggest change that you've seen to the legal industry, to your practices, and are these permanent changes for the legal industry?
Yeah, Jeff, there are definitely silver linings to having the children here, and there's no silver bullet to making it all work. I think generally speaking, I mean, you're asking big picture in the legal industry, what changes have we seen? We've seen work-life mush, I think, in terms of everybody just really having a struggle drawing boundaries. I've never been a fan of that term balance. I think I just want to call it life in general, or work-life integration perhaps is less offensive. But I think right now, what we've seen is, one, the complete possibility to work remotely in a way that I think many people just had been skeptical about previously, and that I do think will continue after the pandemic is over. And two, the obvious nature of the rest of life showing up in the screen all the time. And I'm hopeful that the rest of life won't be forgotten even after the pandemic is over.
I agree with you, Lori. I mean, I think that there's a recognition that what we're all trying to do here is really hard, right? And I know many of us are privileged and we're lucky to have professions where we can work remotely. I mean, I think that's a privilege. At the same time, I don't think we can discount, and I don't think we should discount the challenges. I mean, when we were in the first month of this pandemic, I think most folks thought it'd be over relatively quickly. I mean, I certainly thought that myself. And so we tried to keep all the plates spinning as much as possible, but, you know, being 7 months into it now, which is even hard to say, I think we recognize how much of a toll that it had on us. I mean, at the end of the day, you know, we're just trying to do our best to keep things going. You know, small kids at home for some of us, others are caring for elders, others are immunocompromised and maybe in a higher risk category, others are just on their own and lonely. And so while we're dealing with this, I mean, we're still expected to perform and be there for our clients and colleagues, but I think there's a recognition that, you know, I see you, I hear you, I know how hard this is, and we're in this together. And that's a pretty powerful transformation, especially for the legal industry, I think.
Well, I agree with what everybody is saying. For me, the silver lining is that I had three adult children who descended on our house in March and didn't leave for the most part till the end of August, which was pretty unexpected. It was great for us. I'm not so sure how great it was for our kids. But the idea that there's actually work to be done, that's what's really surprised me the most, actually. The fact that a lot of the lawyers that I speak to are pretty busy, and while they are juggling things that they weren't juggling before, they are busy enough that they don't have to worry about losing their jobs, at least a lot of the lawyers I speak to. The other thing that I've noticed is that because a lot of us have started to work on Zoom in a way that we hadn't before, we're getting to know each other in ways that we might not have otherwise. And this is a little bit less true right now, but certainly at the beginning of the pandemic, I was finding that the quality of my conversations and my relationships got a lot deeper. I was finding out personal things about people that I didn't know. People were not only checking with each other, but they were also giving us visual cues as to what their interests are, what their lives are like. So I think that's been a good thing.
Lori, I thank you all for those answers. Those were great. Lori, I think it is fair to say that for those of us trying to come up with some semblance of balance in terms of taking care of loved ones, young or old, and managing these professional obligations have been very stressful for a lot of people. And we're not going to see that immediate return to normal anytime soon. You think back to March, and the idea was, well, a month from now, we'll be back to where we are. We'll be in the office, et cetera. You're the expert on this. I know a lot of people listening have probably read your book and are aware of your insights. What advice do you have to not just survive, which some might say is enough right now, but also thrive both professionally and personally right now?
That's a great question, Jeff. And I can totally relate to the beginning of the pandemic versus now. I remember when Maryland public schools shut down, but DC hadn't yet at the very beginning. And I remember calling up a friend and saying, ha ha, did you see Maryland shut down for 2 weeks? I would die if that happened to me. Like, oh, really? Oh, really? But to your point of survive and thrive, I mean, I think thrive is off the table for a lot of working parents right now, particularly those who are trying to play tech support, teacher, babysitter, you know, chef, all of the things at once. So I think my first suggestion, and I'll just offer three suggestions here, is really to lower the bar and shoot for sustainability and survival. And survival can now equal success. I know that is a really tough concept for lawyers to get our heads around, because we're, you know, the over-eager type A, over-performing professionals who have all the degrees, and we have to do the extra, extra, extra. And right now, if we do the extra, 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 we're just going to reach burnout pretty much every day. And so I want us to go back down the Maslow's hierarchy of needs a little bit and recognize that putting one foot in front of the other and getting through the day is going to be enough. The second thing I wanted to offer is that I think now is a time for us to dig deep into time management strategies that work. And I'll just offer one up here that tends to resonate with people I talk to. It's the Pomodoro method, which many of you might have heard of. It's based on the concept of like the Italian Pomodoro tomato and the tomato timer that you might find in your kitchen. And the concept is that you set a timer, any timer, for 25 minutes, and you work on one project and one project only with all the things that might possibly ding at you during that 25 minute period, like turned off. So you have that sustained focus on exactly one thing during the 25 minute period, and then you take a 5 to 10 minute break and then come back to it again. And if you get distracted, if someone interrupts you, if you think of the other thing you're supposed to be working on, you just write it down, you manage the distraction, and then you come back to the thing that you were working on. So I find that sort of those short bursts of time when you know you're able to work can really help to focus on like those couple of items that you know you have to get done in a day. I wouldn't recommend using this Pomodoro method like while you're also supervising remote school in the morning or whatever, but it can be a way to like feel as though you did accomplish something in your day. And then the last thing that I'll put out there is, you know, we're learning skills right now around things that we previously may not have had to learn skills around, around sustainability, around avoiding burnout. And I think taking that time for yourself can be so, so, so critical, and that we're just not doing. I mean, we could spend an entire hour just talking about how to shut down at night so that we're not working into the wee hours. because we need sleep and we need to replenish ourselves. But I would put a challenge out to you to find that one time during the week when you have carved out a space for only yourself. My husband and I, we swap 3 hours each on weekends. So I get 3 hours on Saturday, he gets 3 hours on Sunday. Sometimes I wander the neighborhood, sometimes I take a nap, sometimes I read a book, you know, just something to rejuvenate ourselves, I think has to be built into the week and is, you know, a thing that just can't get canceled right now.
I think I would say that I agree with that. I mean, you know, I think that the overall theme and what we're sharing, I think, is we just need to be a little bit kinder to ourselves. I think that it's hard for us to do that, right? And especially, like she said, for legal professionals, it's very difficult to think that we're, or even perceive that we're changing our standards. But we are in the midst of a pandemic, right? We are in the midst of an economic downturn. All these things are real. And I think we've tried to work through it, and we have worked through it. And we've continued to sort of operate as much as business as usual as possible. But I think that that's really a difficult thing to do. And I think at the end of the day, we just need to be a little bit kinder to ourselves, that itself independently can help us go through each day. I mean, in the pandemic, I feel like time is warped, right? Everything is sort of relative. There's only 3 days in the week. It's, you know, yesterday, today, and tomorrow. And I think we need to recognize that and be a little kinder to ourselves.
I would echo what everybody's saying, and I would just underscore it even more. I mean, Lori talked about making sure you save time in the week. I would argue that just try to find at least a few minutes every day. I wake up every morning and the first thing I do is meditate. On days that I'm able to, I try to take a walk. I understand that I don't have the same constraints that people with small children or elders right in the house have. But I tell all my coaching clients, even those that have those living situations, to try to make that time in the morning, particularly because it's easy to let it slide if you don't do that. The other thing is to try to avoid doom scrolling. I don't know if anybody has seen that word yet. It's in Webster's now, I think. And it's basically spending time on social media and reading about the latest horror show. And I won't get political or talk about anything specific, but let's just say there's a lot of things beyond the epidemic that have, beyond the pandemic, that are that can be quite distressing to us.
Great insights. And Yusuf, your point about being kind, not only to yourself, I've found a few instances where I think people are being kinder to others. I know early on in the pandemic, I actually was in a remote hearing, and my daughter, who thinks that boundaries are for suckers, burst into my room and says, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy." And I quickly mute, and I calmly, you know, push her back out the door, come back, sit down. And the judge says, "Mr. Wurzburg, what are your thoughts on that?" And I said, I just had to be honest. And I said, "Your Honor, I'm so sorry. My 4-year-old daughter came in and I missed the question." And he could not have been kinder. And I really was very concerned about what was about to happen. So I do wonder if that is one of the things that I hope will continue over time, is people being kinder professionally and personally to each other. Steve, making a professional transition is always very stressful, whether it's during a pandemic or pre-pandemic times. Obviously, we're dealing with some new challenges here. What advice do you have for anyone looking to make a transition, whether earlier in their career or even later in their career?
So believe it or not, there is lateral movement going on. I've placed two candidates in the last few months who never met in person with the firms that they were moving to. Having said that, I think the lateral market has slowed down a bit. I think the hard part about job hunting in this kind of an environment is that I always give this advice to people. Sure, recruiters can help you, but if you really want to effectively manage your career, you want to be building relationships. And the people that are being actively involved in organizations like this, who are getting to know other professionals, those are the people who are going to find that their careers really thrive into the future. The challenge is that in this environment, it's very hard to connect with people. So you have to make much more of an effort to get to know people. You have to make much more of an effort to connect. And if you attend professional association meetings, look for smaller gatherings where there are people together on Zoom that you could see, and then reach out to them and try to connect with them. I've done that at a few Bar Association meetings. I've enjoyed hearing one of the speakers. I send something to them through the chat window. Would love to chat with you afterwards. I'll send you an email. Is that okay? So I think we have to be a lot more assertive about building our relationships. And it's through our relationships that I've always told people that's the most effective job search that you can wage.
This is Lori. I just want to jump in and echo what you said, Steve, that it, you know, there are ways that you can still target that relationship building time. And I almost think that the admission price for like getting a coffee or a lunch on the calendar has gone way down. You know, it used to be that if someone, you know, reached out and said, hey, you know, I want to pick your brain over lunch or whatever, we'd be looking 3-4 weeks out, maybe 2 months out to get a date on the calendar. Now, you know, somebody can reach out and say, can we do Zoom for 15 minutes? And like, we can do that tomorrow or the next day. You know, it's, you don't have to take half the day to have a meeting with someone anymore. You can just sort of pop in and out much more easily. And so I think some of those networking opportunities are easier right now.
I was actually going to agree with Lori on that. I think that it's, what's interesting is that, you know, you're no longer bound to your geography, right? And you can develop meaningful relationships with people halfway across the world because we're all just used to using those same tools to connect now. And I've experienced that a bit where folks that I may have had to be in their city to connect with, I've been able to get on that 15-20 minute Zoom call and start to, you know, build a relationship with somebody that may have otherwise been very difficult to do. And so it's the I don't think you can ever truly replace in-person connection, right, at the end of the day. But to sort of see the bright side of things in this pandemic, I think you're able to scale out your efforts to connect in a much broader way.
I will add, though, that I have been trying to make an effort, at least now while the weather is nice, at least in the Boston area, to get out on socially distant walks with people. I happen to live in a neighborhood that has a lot of lawyers, and I'm in Metro Boston, and there's a lot of ways to get to see people in person where you don't have to be sitting in a restaurant. So I wouldn't eliminate those if you have the opportunity to connect with people in person.
I always advise people that networking and building relationships is no different than building a friendship. I think oftentimes, especially those early in your career, think that, oh, I'm going to meet someone and they're going to give me a job on the spot or the first time that I meet them. And it's really just planting a seed, and you have to build that relationship and grow that relationship just as you would a friendship. I'd love to hear from all of you, maybe starting again with Steve. How do you, what advice do you have for someone who maybe is trying to plant that seed, but you're not going to have that reason for the run-in at a conference or some other professional interaction that might open the door for someone to creating opportunities to build those relationships?
There are a lot of ways to cultivate relationships that don't cost money. I mean, I could go through a long, long list. I mean, this is a little bit extreme, but one of the things that I do my own podcast, Counsel to Counsel. And honestly, you know, I just hit a pretty significant number of downloads that I was very proud of, but it's not really why I do it. The reason that I do the podcast is that it gives me the opportunity to connect with people who I want to get to know and who I want to learn something from. So to me, the most important part of that, doing a podcast, is having my audience of one. You could write articles and you can try to solicit input from people. You can just keep your eyes and ears out for things that you know people are interested in and send them stuff. There's a lot of ways to connect with people. And as you connect with people and you learn more about them personally, that gives you even more clues and more ways to connect. So those are just some very surface suggestions.
Lori or Yusuf, have either of you encountered interesting or unique opportunities along the way the last several months where perhaps it's just been an interesting Zoom event that you've seen or taken part in where people were able to connect, or perhaps someone has made an outreach to you and you thought, well, you know, that was a good idea.
Happy to jump in here. Definitely. I guess I was going to say before I forgot to take myself off of mute that first of all, like, definitely use LinkedIn. you know, I think LinkedIn is like the magic machine for this type of connection, where you can go through and you can find all these points of commonality. Oh, you used to work at the same firm I did. Oh, you know, we both went to the same college, you know, and then you can reach out and say, we both went to the same college. Let's have a, you know, Zoom coffee. But just as a specific example, I run a group called the Working Parent Group Network, which I founded last summer, and it's just for people who run affinity groups and employee resource groups for caregivers and for parents. And I founded it because I was leading the group at Denton's and I wanted to connect with other people doing the same thing. And, you know, the group grew over the past year, and we'd had maybe one phone call every 3 months, but there was no, you know, impetus for us to all get on Zoom together or see each other. And we started, you know, just last month transitioning from phone over to Zoom. And, you know, it was just this much more intimate conversation among everyone. There were so many more connections that were made because people could see each other. They could write into the chat. And then after the meeting happened, you know, I got a whole number of new signups to the group because it was such an energizing event that all these more people wanted to, you know, join the conversation. So I do think that there's an opportunity here to feel like you're part of a community in a way that might've been a little bit more disconnected by phone in the past.
I think looking for communities that are doing a good job of being online is very important. There are some associations that have not made the transition well, and then there are others that have. I mean, if you're just watching a webinar, you're not really connecting to people probably, unless it's on Zoom as a meeting. So people that know me know that I'm almost like a cult member of Provisors. Provisors is a business networking group that I talk about incessantly. And the reason that I love it, it's lawyers, accountants, trusted advisors of all kinds that have at least 10 years of experience. And there are chapters all over the country. And what Provisors has done really well is bring people together in these Zoom meetings and really make an effort to find ways that people can get to know, like, and trust each other. And sometimes we do that just by, I don't know, there was a group that spun off and set up an opportunity to play cards with each other online. There was one of my home group set up an opportunity to have sort of a virtual coffee, cocktail hour where they everybody submitted songs that they liked. The group tends to lean a little bit older, so we had a lot of music from the 70s and 80s. But finding groups like that where you can continue to cultivate new relationships is still quite possible, but you have to really look for them.
I think that's right. And I think that one of the things that I've seen on that point is almost also an ability to reconnect and recalibrate networks that were sort of struggling prior to the pandemic. One example, you know, we have a group of diversity, equity, inclusion professionals in the Los Angeles area, and we often try to get together in person, and it was always really difficult for scheduling reasons. And, you know, since the pandemic started, we were on a call every single week. People would come in an hour in the afternoon, and we'd come in and we'd talk and we'd sort of commiserate together. And I think it was a group that, you know, was almost impossible to get together in person, but that we can make work because of the situation that we were in. To Lori's point, you know, at Holland and Knight, we've created sort of these circles for parents, specifically working parents. And I know that, you know, nobody wants another Zoom meeting, but at the same time, there's some benefit to being able to commiserate and share ideas and share resources and learn from each other, because the situation we're in is truly unprecedented. There's no playbook for it. And so we can learn a lot from each other. And I think that that is really, really important, because it not only can you learn from folks, but there's also the professional development aspect of it, where you can get connected with people that you may not have otherwise connected with, because you have this common challenge that you're confronting together.
I think what Lori has done is really impressive, just finding an interest in creating her own group. I mean, one of the great things about Zoom is it's so easy to just create a group and set it up, and you don't have to worry about the physical distance, as Youssef was saying. So set up a group that's of common interest, whether it's something personal or professional. You can get together with people and cultivate relationships. Again, it requires a certain level of assertiveness and take charge, but it's not that hard to do.
And I want to talk more about caregivers, especially with regard to professional obligations. So we'll come back to that in a moment. But Lori, you've made a career move the last few years, clearly leaning into something that you're very passionate about and very knowledgeable about. And I would love for you to share a little bit about maybe how that came about, why that came about, and what advice you have for others, whether in the legal profession or not, who are thinking, you know, maybe there's another aspect to my career outside of just the practice of law on a day-to-day basis that I'd like to explore during this unique time.
Sure, Jeff. Happy to tell that story. I guess I'd start off by saying that there is actual research out there that shows that people who start side projects, side hustles, that sort of thing, often find that their happiness level in their day job goes up because they've found an outlet for some of the passions and interests that they were perhaps looking for in their job, but that the job didn't provide. And so I can just say, I'll tell you the origin or birth story of Mindful Return, but for me, I love the intellectual stimulation and the analytical reasoning of my legal practice. And I love the creativity and the mentoring and the blogging and all of that that I do on the Mindful Return side. So for me, they sort of, the skills complement each other. You know, basically I created Mindful Return out of sheer desperation. I had one child and returned to work full time after maternity leave. I was at a trade association at the time. And I found it to be challenging. And then I had my second baby 2 years later. And, you know, in our house, we said 1 + 1 felt like 85. The wheels were coming off. Things were not going well. And I looked around and, you know, the advice that I had gotten about going back to work after parental leave was what I could find on Google at the time, which was pretty much don't put a picture of your baby on your desk or people might not take you seriously, and 2, you might leak on your shirt. And I was like, this is not helpful, people. And so basically I set out to create what I wished had existed for me to help me navigate the transition. And I sort of started becoming a serial founder of working parent groups and really an advocate for the parents in my office because I was feeling so passionate about that topic at the time. I sat down in my bed one night and said, like, I have something to say about this topic and I'm going to write a blog post. And then I sat there and my hands were shaking at the laptop and I'm like, oh my gosh, how does one write a blog post? I don't know. And so I just sort of started and, you know, followed one step after another, after another. It was a baby passion project of 20 minutes a night for the first 6 months or so. And it wasn't until I did it for about a year and a half that I made a transition from my full-time role in-house to a then 60% schedule at the law firm. That was a move I made specifically so that I could have some daylight hours to grow Mindful Return.
You know, I'm guessing that because you're so passionate about this, Lori, I bet it's been very good for your business development on the legal side. I mean, you don't have to tell us whether it has or hasn't been, but I'm always telling my clients that I coach on marketing to be authentic. Mm-hmm. And sometimes lawyers are very anxious about that. They feel like, well, like you just said, I don't want them to think I'm a mother and then a lawyer and that I'm not serious. But by being authentic, I bet you attract more business than you have in the past.
Yes, I think it actually helps the abundance on both sides. It's sort of a virtuous cycle. So, you know, my legal clients know the rest of my life and are, you know, feeling more intimate with me and able to share and build trust really quickly. And then on the Mindful Return side, you know, there are 67 different employers that offer Mindful Return as a parental leave benefit, 2/3 of which are law firms. And the law firms are but like, oh, she's a lawyer. She's a partner at a firm. She gets it. She gets my people, you know? And so it's easier to grow the Mindful Return business, you know, with that base of experience in the law firm as well. So they sort of feed off of each other.
I think that authenticity is super important. And I think it is hard, right? Like we tend to censor ourselves. And one thing that I've really tried to do and on LinkedIn especially is to be as authentic as possible in sharing my opinions and thoughts on things. And sometimes, you know, these things can be difficult for people to hear. But I feel that at the end of the day, it helps elevate the conversation and helps our ability to be able to be our authentic selves, which is, you know, one of the best things that any organization can do, right, is to create a space where folks feel that they can do be that way and don't have to feel that they have to cover parts of their identity or who they are, because that's when you can truly be the most successful, I think.
Absolutely. Amen. 100%. To the extent we can normalize talking about all the different aspects of our lives, that's sort of why I'm out and loud about it, so that other people feel comfortable doing it as well.
So actually, that's a great pivot, because I wanted to be sure that we talked about current events and what that has meant on our industry. And without getting into doom scrolling, as Steve mentioned, obviously the last several months have put a renewed focus on diversity and inclusion within the legal profession. And Yusuf, I would love to hear from you about how we make it stick and how we ensure that as time goes on, we don't pivot away from these very worthy goals and endeavors that the profession has set for themselves the last few months. And what are some of the creative approaches that you're seeing firms and other offices take?
Yeah, no, this you're right. I mean, this has been an unprecedented year, right? I mean, we started with a global pandemic, an economic downturn, and now we have a renewed call for racial justice in the wake of the murder of George Floyd. And there's a common thread, right, throughout all of these challenges. And that's the disproportionate impact of systemic inequality on communities and people of color. And I think the murder of George Floyd really woke this nation up in a way that we've never seen before, at least not in our, you know, modern sort of history. And I think it's important to understand the context, right? Like there's centuries of systemic racism and oppression that continue to have very real consequences for Black people, for people of color, beyond the murders that we see in the news. And thinking about healthcare specifically, right, for leading causes of death, Black Americans faced higher fatality rates than white Americans, even when socioeconomic status is controlled. Racism and discrimination have a well-documented impact on the health of underrepresented populations. And the pandemic has spotlighted this, right? You know, with Black and Hispanic populations being, you know, twice as likely, if not more, to be killed by COVID-19. At the same time, we also see the rise in anti-Asian discrimination, right, in the face of the pandemic, with over 2,000 hate incidents reported in the last several months. And I also worry about the equity gaps that are being created, right? This economic downturn has caused by COVID-19 has impacted underrepresented populations at a disproportionately higher rate, which means that, you know, many have lost their jobs and their homes. You know, we see instances of children not having access to internet or devices to be able to attend virtual school, or not having a home even in which they can study. And so this is going to just widen the equity gaps that we already experience. And the reason I'm, you know, talking about all of this is we have to consider the context, right? We have to understand the context of the challenge that we're dealing with, and our response has to be adequate to that context. And I think the legal profession is responding in an entirely new way from what I've seen over the last several months. A couple examples. First, you know, more than 200 law firms have joined the Law Firm Anti-Racism Alliance. We've created a new alliance. It's a consortium of law firms committed to dismantling racism. This in itself is independently extraordinary, but the consortium has the resources and the firepower really to be able to address issues around racism and to galvanize our pro bono efforts in an entirely new way. I also think that law firms are thinking a lot more critically about their equity, diversity, inclusion efforts. They're coming around to a recognition that this cannot be done in a silo, right? It's not solely the responsibility of the diversity person or the diversity team to solve this. I mean, this is something that has to be scaled out across the organization, and leadership in the organization has to be invested in the work and has to accelerate it. And I think we're coming around to firms, you know, majority of firms now, I think, considering this, factoring it in, being truly accountable in the way that they do this work. And I think the time has come, right, for these conversations. That I think the profession is having a real reckoning, I think, in a very positive way.
One of the reasons I've always felt that being a lawyer is a compelling and meaningful profession is that we've always been at the forefront of social justice and civil rights. And it's been very interesting to see our profession try and meet the moment these past several months. I'm curious, Steve, in terms of what you're seeing from the recruitment side, are you seeing any interesting efforts in terms of appealing to professionals that have an interest in this, and what are employers doing to try and show that they are on the right side of history?
Well, I've been in the recruiting business for over 20 years, and the issue of trying to increase diversity is not new, although many of us have now woken up and realized that it's much more urgent and timely. I think that law firms are now going to pay even more attention to this. In my opinion, I think where the best inroads can be made, at least initially, especially for the larger law firms, is at the point of entry, because I only deal with lateral hiring. And if I get a call from Holland & Knight or any of your firms, you're going to want to see somebody that's been trained up at a big law firm already. And if the person wasn't there to begin with, you have a pipeline that isn't filled enough. Now, I also live in a part of the country, Boston, which is very liberal. However, it's not very diverse. We've gotten more diverse, but we're not that diverse. So it continues to be a big challenge, but certainly the awareness is greater. I think a big challenge for a lot of law firms, and I'm sure Yusuf is more aware of this than I am, is the inclusion piece, which is now that people are separated, you don't even have those opportunities for the informal water cooler chats. So people are just gravitating towards the people that they feel most comfortable with. And I'd be curious to hear what are some of the ways that firms like Holland & Knight and Dentons are trying to deal with that issue.
It's a great point. And I think that we always, you know, when it comes to conversations around DE&I, you know, it's a holistic approach is required, right? And I think a lot of the history of this work in law firms has always focused on the diversity piece, right? Looking at representation and numbers and looking at the demographics in an organization. And the work is, if you look at the scale of the work and the time scale of it, it's relatively new still in the legal industry. And I think there's been a recognition in recent years that just focusing simply on the diversity portion of it is insufficient, right? There needs to be a focus on equity and on inclusion. And the way that I think about those things is that there's really just, it really boils down to a few discrete challenges in almost every single legal institution. I think that's, you know, access to work opportunities, whether that's actual work or client opportunities, access to social capital and information, access to leadership within the organization, and room to grow and room to fail, right? And those often are the challenges that prevent us from being able to promote and advance and keep underrepresented populations at the law firm, at any law firm. And I think one of the things that this pandemic has done, to your point, it has made those sort of informal connections that happen in the office harder. But at the same time, we've had the ability to be able to break down barriers that existed across the firm, because there's no longer an excuse about, you know, that person doesn't work in my office or that person I've never met before. We can create those connections in a much more organic way. And we can connect the dots between people and opportunities in an entirely new way because of the format in which we're now working. So I think that, you know, there's a bright side to this. Again, we don't know what's going to happen when and what work is going to look like after the pandemic, how that's going to function at law firms is still, I think, an open question. But this has presented an opportunity for us to be able to connect the dots in entirely new ways.
Jeff, can I just jump in here and say a word about women in the legal profession?
Absolutely, of course.
Yeah, so I am, you know, completely in agreement about the efforts that firms are undergoing right now that have shifted since the summer. And I think one of you, and I've forgotten who, talked about the sense of urgency that firms are now feeling. And I just wanted to sound the alarm bell for working mom lawyers right now and working moms in general. The data from the earlier months of the pandemic showed that it was the moms who were shouldering a lot of the school related activity and, you know, sort of all that mental burden type stuff we hear about. And then sadly, it's playing out that it's the moms who are leaving the workforce. And there are some dire statistics about potentially 20%, 30% of working women planning to leave their job by the end of the year. And so, I mean, I've been saying throughout the pandemic, like, what are partnership numbers going to look like at the end of this year in terms of like women being put up for partner versus men? And like, I just want to sort of say that we are in a state of massive crisis right now when it comes to parents who are working, specifically women who are working, and like even more pain, I think, being felt by Black women who are working. I mean, Yusuf was talking a little bit about the disparate health data, for example. Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely to die in pregnancy-related and childbirth-related incidents, accounting even for, you know, variations in where they live and education and all of that. And so I think we just need to like have a super sharp focus right now on making sure we don't lose all the gains that we've made in the legal profession in terms of promoting women. I wouldn't say that we're anywhere near where, you know, I ultimately would hope, but we have made progress. And I don't want to see all of that go down the drain this year.
Well, so that's actually a perfect seg because I'd like to end on a positive note. And with that, you know, we've referenced how there have been some changes that are positive the last several months in the way that we as a profession are working, be it remote work, be it more flexibility, focusing again and hopefully permanently on diversity and inclusion. I'd love for each of you to get out your time machine, whichever time machine is your preference, be it DeLorean, et cetera. Jump 5 years forward. What is one change in our profession that isn't going to revert once we've moved beyond the pandemic? And any other thoughts you have on what still needs to change more moving forward?
I'm happy to kick it off. First of all, there is a DeLorean parked about 0.3 miles from my house that my children and I love marveling at. It's been there since the beginning of the pandemic, and I suspect it's just not going there anytime soon. But I think the butt in chair mentality is hopefully one of the things that is gone permanently. And, you know, it's one of the things that often harmed working parents, and flexibility, I think, does benefit everyone. So the working from anywhere and everywhere thing is something I hope is here to stay.
Travel to clients is not going to come back in the way that it has been important in large law firm practice. I mean, there will be more travel at some point, but I think clients are going to be a lot less likely to want to pay to fly somebody across the country to take a deposition or just to have a quick client meeting.
And I want to harp on sort of the topic that Lori was mentioning too, especially when it comes to maintaining the pipeline of diverse talent in these institutions. And I think the one thing, and of course, the DeLorean is my choice of time travel machine. There, I don't think there's any other choice. But I think that you know, the commitment to diversity, equity, and inclusion is really important, because I think what we saw at the beginning of this pandemic, I think we saw the legal industry sort of subtly try to, not necessarily intentionally, but deprioritize the work around D&I, because the industry was in triage mode, trying to survive, and folks felt that D&I was something that could probably push to the wayside. And George Floyd, in the aftermath, was the universe telling us, you know, no, that's not acceptable. And I think if you look at sort of how law firms have dealt with the economic downturn now versus how they've dealt with it in 2008, 2009, it's very different, especially around diversity, equity, and inclusion. It's a lot more, folks are just a lot more aware of the consequences, a lot more aware of the talent that they're trying to maintain, and to be more cognizant of the fact that they, you know, we need to be more careful around how folks are feeling and how folks are able to, you know, continue to work in this space. So I think that we're, again, looking forward several years, I believe we're at a point where, you know, this commitment around equity, inclusion, diversity is now pretty firmly embedded in the genes of our industry. And I think it's up to us to continue to really maximize that as much as possible and address the concerns that Lori mentioned and address the broader concerns around maintaining maintaining and growing our levels of representation. And I think that's going to be here to stay.
Well, thank you all. And that is a wonderful positive note to end on. Lori, Yusuf, Steve, thank you so much for your insights, for joining today. Thank you to the American Health Lawyers Association for allowing us to put on this podcast that I hope was helpful to everyone listening. And please do check out the Payers Plans and Managed Care webpage for upcoming events and content that we're putting out. And stay well. Bye-bye.